Okay, and welcome to the Racing Post's postcast. It's Monday the 13th of December. We've had another fine weekend's jump racing, mostly jump racing. We're going to be reflecting on the action from Cheltenham and also a bit of Doncaster, and throwing forward to what's to come this week. It's Chris Cook here in the chair, sitting in for Maddie Playle, who I think is going to be back next week. I was doing some non-serious race going over the weekend, unusually for me. I was given some time off and I was mostly trying to keep my nine-year-old from falling under horses' hooves at Cheltenham on Saturday. So I'm going to be relying heavily on my colleagues today, James Stevens and Tom Collins, who join me to chew over what we saw and what we learned and whether they managed to back any winners. James, I gather you were on duty for the post at Cheltenham both days, Friday and Saturday. How did you find it?
Yeah, it was a very different experience for me, Chris. There was no luxury lunches and gold cups to be handed over from my end. On the whole, yeah, it was a very, very interesting 2 days. I suppose they felt very different, you know, giving mention to the Frost and Dunn case, which has really been very massive in the sport at the moment. On Friday, it was just sort of, I suppose, digesting what happened, and the mood was really quite unpleasant. You know, Cheltenham was so used to, I suppose, since COVID restrictions have been somewhat lifted and Cheltenham's been back, there's always been a really good feel-good atmosphere there. People, you know, really passionate about Cheltenham and love being there. But nobody felt like they wanted to be there on Friday. It felt uncomfortable. It felt strange. And it felt almost like there was a very, very big elephant in the room. But Saturday was a lot different. And some top quality racing. And I think we did see some Cheltenham Festival clues as well.
I mean, just on the Frost Dunn outcome, we don't think this story is completely at an end yet, do we? There's every chance of an appeal. I gather that Robbie Dunn has 7 days in which to lodge an appeal, and that won't start running until we have the written reasons from the disciplinary panel, which they haven't published yet. So, you know, bearing that in mind, the outcome last week didn't seem to settle anything for an awful lot of people. I mean, we had the PGA coming out and sort of basically attacking the verdict, saying they didn't accept it initially. Then Sunday, a little bit of a step back from that. They now say that they do accept that Bryony was bullied, and they're more accepting of the panel's verdict, even allowing for the fact that there might be further proceedings. It's been a real shock to the system in this case, I think, James. It's not at all what we expected. First of all, the idea that any jockey has been isolated or, you know, badly treated by their peers. And then to find the PGA and the BHA at such loggerheads, it's a very disrupting moment for the sport. Can we move forward from it, do you think?
Yeah, well, we obviously can. It's a case that we do have these sort of moments in horse racing. I mean, I still remember the sort of earlier this year, the Gordon Elliott case, and that seemed to have something as much of an interest in terms of a sort of national audience as this one does. And look, it's one of those, isn't it? You know, we don't know how the case will go on, and there's still obviously going to be some twists and turns on the way, as we've already had. That will come in due course, I'm sure, in the new year, perhaps, that will continue to rumble on. But, you know, racing is at this point in time, I think it's looking back on itself and just sort of taking a bit of perspective. In particular, on Friday, it was the word rancid that the independent disciplinary panel used to describe the culture of the weighing room.
Well, I think it was initially, wasn't it, the counsel for the BHA that used that word, I think.
Yes. But it was the word and subsequently the sort of implication of that which had struck a nerve, as you rightly say. I mean, I think the weighing room itself, I think they almost felt a little bit under attack. I think that's the thing that's really sort of that I've sort of gathered from the 2 days. You know, for the people who work in the weighing room, for the jockeys that ride out, you know, I think it's a really important place for a lot of them. You know, it's where their colleagues are, it's where their sort of home is away from home, I guess. You know, it's you know, being a jockey is a job that there's not a lot of other world you can sort of relate to, you know. So they are all in the same boat in the sense that they know what the driving like, they know what the sort of the eating habits and the pressures that may have, and sort of keeping after owners and looking after trainers and keeping those relationships. The jockey's job is so different to anything else. They are the people in the world that can empathise with them, and I think that when something that's important to you gets sort of threatened or sort of spoken about in terms that you're not sort of happy about, you do sort of go on the defensive. And I think that's possibly what's happened a little bit. But it's an important time for racing to sit back and realise, well, OK, yeah, in the majority of cases, it is a really good thing that we've got, and the majority of people are happy. But we now know that that's not all true. You know, that there are people that are unhappy. And yeah, I think going forward, we just need to sort of learn from the mistakes of that, learn what has happened, hear what's going to be really sort of written come out of this, and move forward from it. You know, whether that's a case of a bit more training, whether that's a case of sort of educating ourselves across the board a bit more, I'm not quite sure, but I'm sure that's something that will sort of be discussed. But look, we will move forward from it. Racing always goes on. It seems to be every day, doesn't it? So yeah, it's an unpleasant few weeks, but look, it's jump racing, isn't it? There's something very, very big around the corner which will take over all our lives, and it's not that far away.
Yeah, I mean, quite often in the past, to be honest, we've been grateful for the racing at Cheltenham, haven't we, to sort of help us forget our daily woes. I think when all of this shakes down, I mean, I understand the defensiveness from the weighing room, because they haven't had to put up with much scrutiny in the past. We've been, you know, the industry as a whole has been content to let jockeys basically deal with it themselves, and that's worked up to the point where it hasn't, and clearly it hasn't. It's not working now. And there are some out-of-date attitudes being expressed. I think in the future, the weighing room is going to have to put up with more scrutiny than it's enjoyed in the past. Anyway, let's move on then from the politics and turn to some racing. On Friday, we had some excellent action at Cheltenham, including a race I always take quite seriously, but to some people it's a joke race across country. Some of the same horses involved in the finish on Friday as we're running there in November. And what do you make of it, James?
Yeah, it was a funny sort of race, as you say, because it was really dominated numbers wise by the Irish, and we sort of, well, I suppose in that division, we're always sort of crying out for a real clue going forward for the big one in March. The winner, Diesel de Zellier, was obviously very, very good. You know, he's run very well twice there, and he's improved and stepped forward again from his run at November. You know, it is a handicap. They are sort of a long, long way down in official ratings in the Tiger Roll and the Easy Lands and like. But, you know, you've got to like the way he's gone through the fences, which is arguably the sort of real, the real sort of what makes the race stand out almost. It's the fences, I can't think of a word, I'm sorry. But that's part of a parcel of a cross-country race. He did everything he was meant to do well. He hit the line really strongly like a proper stayer. And you sort of imagine that given his sort of his old form, if it is to be a more testing cross country in March, then that's probably going to be no bother for him as well. He's about 16 to 1 for the race. And look, given what he's done this season, you'd be foolish not to think he's going to have an each way chance.
It's not bad, is it, at all, for a horse that's won twice around the track? It's a real specialist course, isn't it? And the interesting thing about him is he's with Richard Bandy this season, having been trained in France up till the summer there. Tom, this kind of race wouldn't normally be your bag. What did you make of it?
No, far from a five furlong sprint on the dirt, which is my preferred race. But it was a thrilling finish, wasn't it? Just seeing Potter's Corner turn for home, a horse that everyone loves, an 11-year-old, obviously won the Welsh Grand National in 2019. And somehow he got picked up by Diesel Dallier. Potter's Corner, one of the strongest stayers in racing. Diesel Dallier, another brilliant training performance by Richard Bandy, who you just mentioned. He's having a phenomenal season. 6 from 36, a 17% strike rate, and a positive £1 level stakes return. A brilliant season so far for Richard Bandy. Great training performance. The one horse that I would take out of this race looking towards the Cheltenham Festival cross country event is Plan of Attack. He was held up early on. He made eye-catching progress and looked the most likely winner to my eye, turning for home. He just made a slight mistake at the last. He can make a fair few mistakes, which obviously isn't ideal, especially in the cross country. But he would be the one out of that race that I would be interested in going forward, looking ahead to March.
I remember Plan of Attack was in a lot of headlines in the days leading up to the Bet365 Gold Cup at Sandown in April. I think, you know, largely because, you know, Irish horses were winning everything at that point, and it was, you know, Rachel Blackmore was going to come over and ride in the race, and she'd been winning everything. He didn't win that day. He was held in seventh, and he hasn't won since. But it does feel like, you know, that at some stage there's a handicap in him.
Yeah, most definitely. It looks like Henry de Bromhead's basically had the cross country in March in mind from a long way out for Plan of Attack. He's obviously run at the track twice this year, shaped really well both times, under a really good jockey in Dara O'Keefe as well. I think he's going to have a good chance in March. It'll be interesting to see what horses line up. And obviously, he'll probably have to reverse the form with Diesel Dallier, who beat him on Friday. But he would be my idea of a good anti-post bet in the race. But obviously, I say all this, it's not my favourite race to bet in by any means.
Well, it's good to stretch your repertoire, I think, sometimes. And then earlier we had a really thrilling performance from Commodore in the staying handicap chase, wide margin winner for Venetia Williams and Charlie Deutsch. Thrilling grey making all, James, always great fun to watch.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, off that sort of weight, it was really, really tough to stop. And I think you'd struggle to find a horse anywhere that would have beaten him the way he sort of did it off that sort of weight. It was a really, really fine jumping display, as you say. And he looked very, very good, didn't he? I mean, he's been a horse that's threatened to land a sort of nice handicap for a while. And I think he just had his day there. I was interested to hear after the race, they sort of saying that left-handed is sort of quite important to this horse. And if you actually go through his form, it certainly seems like he is significantly better left-handed. So with that in mind, considering he was sort of well beaten in two races at right-handed tracks last season, perhaps they will campaign a little bit more sort of cleverly and savvily, and we won't see as many dips as we have sort of in his form, you know. But he's a very, very good horse, clearly. I think staying would be no problem. The classic chase at Warwick was discussed for his next race. You wouldn't worry about any more rain with him. You wouldn't worry. He didn't look like stopping, did he? It's hard to tell because he was so far clear, but he didn't look like stopping. So, you know, he could well be progressive, and it's just another really fine training performance from Venetia, who is absolutely flying with these sort of horses this season.
Absolutely. Tom, the difficulty with a horse like Commodore, he's going to get hammered in the handicap, isn't he? And that's going to make him uncompetitive, isn't it, for the rest of the season? The time to catch him is maybe first time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He's a horse that goes extremely well fresh as well, which is another pointer to the angle you just made there. First time up was the time to catch him. Yes, he'll be hammered in the handicap. He won by 15 lengths. It could have been 25. He certainly wasn't stopping, and they went super quick early as well. I should mention just a little positive about Santini, because I feel like I'm constantly saying negatives about this horse. But Polly Gundry's done a great job, because he raced with enthusiasm for a long way, which we haven't seen for a fair while. So it was glad to see Santini race with enthusiasm again. He eventually finished fourth. In Rillo, I think he's a bit of a quitter. I really fancied him on a seasonal reappearance in the Ladbrokes Trophy. Obviously, he fell that day. I thought he was in with a good chance when he fell. But at Cheltenham, he looked like he was coming into the race and then just fell in a hole. He kind of did that in the Bet365 Gold Cup last year. Obviously, he won the race, but he hung left and right up the straight and cost Kitty's Light the race, probably subsequently demoted. I'd be avoiding Enrillo going forward. But look, Commodore was a thrilling winner, a brilliant jumping performance. Maybe not one to follow for the rest of the year, but first time up next year, he could be a horse on your radar.
Yeah, that would be my thinking too. You never quite know. Maybe he's just taken the key step forward. That's interesting what you say about Santini, though, because I was just looking at it from a ratings perspective. You know, that would not count as one of his best runs, but maybe if he comes on from it at all, you know, he can be competitive. His mark's coming down a bit.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. The thing with Santini is, I don't know about you guys, but I've just completely written him off as a horse to back or follow in any race. He just says his race like he hasn't really wanted to be on a racetrack for the last couple of years. But I thought Polly Gundry's obviously done a great job, because he did race like he wanted to be there, and he showed enthusiasm. He lay up with the speed for a long way, and they went quick. So look, Santini, who was normally sulking out the back in his races, actually showed a verve for running again. Polly Gundry could find an easier opportunity for him potentially, but the market, as you say, is pretty rough for Santini at this stage.
And just to butt in there, it will be Cotswold Chase, I think, is next going to be next for him. I spoke to the owners on Saturday, but they were extremely happy with the run. They think he'll improve massively for it. So, as you say, certainly encouraging signs from the old boy.
Cotswold Chase, though, I mean, that you're going to bump into Gold Cup types in that race, aren't you?
Maybe he's not going to win that.
No, that wouldn't appeal to me. I think with his... with a dropping handicap mark, you know, maybe you should be looking at handicap somewhere. But, they get to make that decision. We'll see what happens. Moving on to Saturday then, and we had the first running of the Racing Post Gold Cup. What a thrill to have the paper's name added to, you know, what's been known in the past as a number of different names. But, you know, for old timers like me, it's the Massey Ferguson, basically, the December Gold Cup. Horses for Courses, Cool Cody, who's done it around Cheltenham before, won it again, James.
Yes, it was a pleasing result. It's hard not to sort of smile when a horse like this of a certain age that we've seen going around the big tracks, the big races many years, and then they go and land a big one. I think even more so, this horse had taken a pretty nasty fall in the Paddy Power Gold Cup. I think I remember being there on the day and there were concerns about, you know, him and whether we'd see him again. So to see him sort of come back a month later and basically pick up the pieces and do it all again, it was pretty phenomenal. You know, it was a big price considering, you know, 12 to 1, I think he went off, considering how strongly he sort of travelled in there. I don't think he would have won the Paddy Power myself, but, you know, look, he was going to run a big race nonetheless. Look, he's back to his best. Whether this will be his Gold Cup for the season, pardon the pun, that might be it for him. But it was a great run nonetheless. And like I say, it's a good story. I thought Midnight Shadow, who we just mentioned there, won the Paddy Power. I think Handicap has probably got him sus now, you know, £7 rise and he seemed well beaten. The interesting one for me was Zanza, who continues to be one of the most muddling horses I've ever seen. You'll all remember last year he fell in that race won by Sky Pirate, where he looked like the best handicapped horse in training for a bit of time. And then he's a bit gone off the boil, but he finished from nowhere really, really strongly. And you'd have to sort of think about going 3 miles now with him. The guys in our analysis team mentioned the sort of old Racing Post chase. I wonder if they might look at the Sky Bet chase of him. You know, that sort of track seems to have done well at Newbury before. I guess that's sort of a similar Doncaster. And then Fuser Raffles was another interesting one. Didn't jump particularly well, but we know how good he is. And he still managed to finish fourth. Whether he'll go back up to 3 miles, I'm not quite sure which way they'll go with him. But he's a confusing horse. And Layla, I thought Layla was really disappointing. Perhaps it's a little bit of a bounce factor after his decent run in the Paddy Power.
I've got half an iron Sirrah Dulac, bearing in mind, you know, what a talented animal he used to be, and still only eight. I mean, you know, he's obviously about to turn nine. It's going to be 3 years since his last win by the time we get to March. So there's that to worry about. And he's had wind surgery and changed stables and, you know, there's obviously been problems along the way, but you know, his rating is dropping. He was up there for a long way. At some stage, I think there's a prize in him. What did you take from the race, Tom?
I completely agree with you with Sirrah Dulac. He looked like the most likely winner for a long right. portion of that race. And yes, he faded late. He had assured stamina, but it just seemed to bottom out. If he drops down the handicap, I'd be interested in him for a trainer in David Pipe that does extremely well with this type of horse. I'm going to make a public plea to punters, which is never back Zanza. This horse is just so eye-catching run after run, and he just, you know, this is a 150 horse that's running off 145. So yes, he's well handicapped, but he cannot jump. If you don't jump, you're not going to win a handicap chase, especially if you're stepping up and trip. He has all the ability in the world, but that's not good enough. And if you're a punter and chucking money at him, then you've only got yourself to blame, I think. The Paddy Power Gold Cup, yes, another brilliant trial for the Race Post Gold Cup. I know it as the Caspian Caviar, of course. I was in the RP Live studios alongside our colleague Dave Orton, who everyone who's watched RP Live before will know that Dave doesn't lack enthusiasm. And he was absolutely screaming home Cool Cody. So this race was obviously phenomenal for him. I wanted Midnight Shadow to confirm that form. He ran a great race, just didn't have it again today in the Racing Post Gold Cup. And obviously, we should mention Dostal Phil. The race had a sad postscript with Dostal Phil, unfortunately, breaking down and suffering a fatal injury. He was a horse that showed plenty of promise for a long time. And, you know, I don't think we saw the best of Dostal Phil. And commiserations to Connections for obviously what happened on Saturday.
That was really sad, as you say. And he absolutely did feel like a young horse who had more to offer. I so agree with what you say about Zanza, and yet at the same time, now that you've expressed it so strongly, it's, you know, isn't he nailed on to win next time?
Oh yeah, absolutely certain. Absolutely certain, Chris. But I will be laying him no matter what. So
yeah, well,
there'll be one winner. Yeah,
I mean, 12 to 1 on Saturday wasn't a bad price, but as you say, he does keep poking his head above the parapet. I can't imagine he'll be a value price the next day. And Fusel Raffles, I sort of feel similarly about it. When you get into these big field handicaps, I'm not sure he quite has the athleticism to win one of those over fences anyway, but we'll see. Moving on, Blazing Cal won the Albert Bartlett trial, used to be known as the Bristol Novices Hurdle, a grade two for Charles Burns, and Blazing Cal, I think, now tops the market for the real thing at the festival in March. He's 5-1 favourite for the Albert Bartlett at the festival, which is, I think, 3 points shorter than anything else. Yes, there's Hollow Games, Journey With Me, Kilcrutt also in there. James, you see him as a serious festival prospect?
I do, yes. I wouldn't touch his current price, though. I don't think, you know, that market is one that traditionally changes all over the sort of season. And I'm sure that Christmas will certainly have a say in that, and he might almost sort of go down the pecking order a little bit. He's a proper horse. He stays really, really well, and that's I think that's the key to this horse, you know, the way he stays and such. He's taken a massive step forward from what he did the last day. I know he beat the same horse, but Gelino Bello, I think it was. He's had a £5 swing with him, and he's gone and beaten him by even further. So, you know, things have been tougher for him, and he's won very impressively. I was sort of looking in the sort of past history of this race. I found it quite interesting that his Racing Post rating it achieved, I think it's 149. Only one horse has actually got higher than that. And that's King's Palace, who was a good horse in his own right. Not, I mean, he never quite achieved what he was promised to be, and he died only at 8. But the past winners of that race include Coney Gree, Black Lion, and then You Know What I Mean, Harry and Kilbrick and Storm, who went on to win the Albert Bartlett. So in terms of what he did and what the sort of assessors thought he did, he's clearly up there and clearly deserves to be a leading fancy. But yeah, I just worry that the rest of the season might throw up another really sort of hyped Albert Bartlett contender, which there always seems to be one.
Tom, what would you make of him? I mean, as James says, there's bound to be more contenders coming out of the woodwork for a race like the Albert Bartlett. It is a novice hurdle. You know, there might be serious contenders that haven't even jumped a hurdle in public yet.
Yeah, definitely. And one of those is Journey With Me, who I've actually backed Antipost for the Albert Bartlett and for the Ballymore. Obviously, we don't know where he's going to go yet. We haven't even seen him over hurdles for Henry de Bromhead, but he shaped with great promise last year in a Goran bumper that was won by Bob Bollinger. He would be my long-range fancy for either of those two races, depending on what connections decide. But Blazing Cow was impressive. He definitely stays 3 miles very well. There was no doubt he was going to win when he hit the front turning for home, because he's just got stamina in abundance. Charles Burns, interestingly, campaigning him with the Albert Bartlett in mind. He could have done a classic Charles Burns and tried to keep his handicap mark. But he thinks his horse is fantastic. I think he said he's the best horse, one of the best horses he's ever trained, which is clearly respective praise for Blazing Cow. The one issue with him, aside from his price, completely agree with James about his price, he's far too short at this stage. But the one issue is that he tends to make a mistake. He made a real howler. I don't know if it was 3 out or 4 out, whenever it was. But it was, or maybe 2 out. It was a terrible mistake. And in a bigger field, that could cost him. He would lose greater momentum and obviously positioning as well. In a small field like what we saw on Saturday, he could kind of get away with it. He still maintained his position at the inside. Donny McInerney produced him at the right time. But I think in a bigger field, he could be found out. And I don't want to be taking that shorter price right now, Chris.
Fair enough. So then we had the Unibet International Hurdle. Sam Twiston Davies pushing out Guard Your Dreams to success. And then made us all blush with his post-race comments about how brave his dad had been. James, Guard Your Dreams, was it a surprise to you? I mean, I guess only 5-1. One could overplay it. But evidently the jockey wanted to save him for another day.
Yeah, the comments were certainly very interesting after the race. Was it a surprise to me? I don't think it was, to be honest. I sort of saw it as quite an open race. And, you know, I know Nigel Tristan Davis said to the press after the race, well, the handicap said he couldn't win it. It wasn't a race that was particularly deep, was it? You know, you could have excuses about all of them. You know, So Royale had come back and it's been really busy. And, you know, Song for Someone, we're still not quite sure where he sat in the market and where he was going to go after he was beaten pretty soundly by Buzz at Ascot. So there were question marks over the ratings and such, but look, he's a typical sort of Nigel Tristan Davis horse, isn't he? One that's sort of improved, and he's not been sort of afraid to try and find the right races for him at Cheltenham. He's, you know, he won his handicap at the start of the season and he's progressed from it. They found the right race for him. They had him right on the day and he's won it very well. Look, he's probably a grade two horse. This is probably going to be as good as he is. He's only five. He might well improve, and he might well end up over fences in time. But you can see him just in these sort of races and picking his way. And given connections, I'd imagine he'll turn up at Haydock next for the new one, Champion Hurdle Trial at Haydock, which would obviously be nice for connections if they could win that with one of their own. Song for Someone, I'd be interested to hear what Tom thinks of him. I'm just quite not sure what to make of him. You know, it was a very strange run, whether he just sort of doesn't quite have the gears and, you know, didn't quite have the gears to get into his position, or whether he was sort of held back too far. But, you know, I wonder where they'll sort of go with him next. You know, we know all about sort of big race targets and such, and he ended up at the Aintree Hurdle, and there's a few good races over sort of two and a half miles and their option. But I just wonder if they might be tempted to chuck him in a Cleve Hurdle at the end of the season and just see how he'd get on over three, because that's always quite an open division, and he certainly sort of got the class to warrant having a crack at it.
Tom, straight over to you then. Would you make a Song for Someone? I mean, I guess he comes out as the best horse in the race at the weights anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's rated £8, superior to Guard Your Dreams. He was beaten half a length, giving £6. I don't know what to make of him. I personally don't think he warms up for about a mile and a half in his races. He doesn't seem to travel or want to race early on. He did this in the Kingwell as well, in Goshen's Kingwell. He just didn't want to go for about the first mile. Obviously, Aidan Coleman was coaxing him along on Saturday. He did the same in the Kingwell. And yes, he stayed really well up the hill, was an eye catcher. But again, I just can't be putting my money on a horse like this. You don't really know what to expect with him. And if you do expect something, it is that he's not going to travel throughout the first portion of the race, which is something you don't want, especially if you backed him. I thought Hunter's Call, ran a screamer for Ollie Murphy. One of two veterans that ran a great race for Ollie Murphy on Saturday. He travelled brilliantly throughout the race on his second start after Windup. He's obviously 11 now, so that he's probably going to be regressing. But he could be one for a race on a flatter track. But I didn't think it was the strongest race at all. Sorroyal obviously ran flat. Wild About Oscar isn't a strong finisher, and I didn't really think he was suited by the new tactics. Heaven Help Us couldn't get to the front early, which ruined her chance. Bally Adam was too keen. So, and obviously Song for Someone didn't travel. So the Guard Your Dreams is obviously the winner, but I wouldn't be taking this form as gospel moving forward.
Well, what do we make of Bally Adam? I mean, he just doesn't seem to have gone on since winning the Royal Bond. Punters still giving him chances, aren't they? He was only 5-1 on Saturday, but disappointing again.
Yeah, I do think he travelled really well for a long way, which is intriguing, especially on the drop back as they reverted back to hurdles after, two shoddy chase starts. Punters are always going to be with a horse like Bally Adam because he represents Henry de Bromhead, Rachel Blackmore, Cheveley Park, connections that we've seen with great effect over the last few years. He's clearly still got an engine over 2 miles, but I don't know where they're going to place him because he's proven a hard horse to find a winning opportunity with. I do think there are races in him, though. Henry de Bromhead's brilliant at placing his horses, and I'm sure he'll find one along the way.
Very good. And then Saturday's card ended with a mare's handicap hurdle. Only a neck in it as Martello Sky beat Indefatigable James. What did you make of it?
Yeah, funny sort of end today. I guess it was an interesting horse, Martello Sky. It's one sort of, it's always been in sort of back of my mind. I've watched her, and I think ground is the important thing with Martello Sky. I think when she gets on sort of better ground, she's actually pretty useful. Aintree the last day, she was backed into favourite, and I know they called it good to soft, but I think it was possibly on the heavier side than the going's description suggests. Her form at the track is very, very good. And I was sort of having a look. I saw she's into, I think, about 20-1, I think, is the biggest price for the mare's hurdle. She's a real sort of outside chance in there. But I'm sort of looking through it and wondering, you know, if Epitome, unless Epitome does anything strange on Boxing Day, she's going to be up there as one of the sort of main British chances. She's going to have to be, you know, she's rated 140. She'll probably go up to 143, 140, 445, something along those lines. Black Tears was rated 148 when she won it last year. So, look, she's going to have to improve a lot again, and she'd have to have her conditions at Cheltenham. But, you know, she's still young. She's still improving. She's 7 wins from 11. You know, it would be nice if she can continue to climb up ladder, because it's great to see different connections in those big races. But I think she's improving, and I think there's more to come. But I really think the ground's going to be important with her if she's going to have any sort of chance in a mare's hurdle or something like that.
Tom, I sort of looked at this as being not quite good enough form for, you know, throwing forward to the mayor's hurdle. You got Indefatigable, who was sort of, you know, held in fourth back in March, having been a festival winner in the past. And, you know, she obviously best horse in this race, giving £5 to the winner, only beating a neck. There's probably going to be an Irish 1, 2, maybe 3 as well when we get to the big race in March, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. But take nothing away from Martello Sky. On Saturday, she performed really well. Lucy Wadham has placed her fantastically as well. 7 victories from 11 starts. That's what you call prolific, especially for a mare. Martello Sky, I think the race was won by a shrewd and sharp move by Aidan Coleman, who, I mean, it must have been great joy for him to ride a winner. He's had a torrid time the last couple of weeks, a couple of stinkers as well as some bad luck along the way. I think he's just 2 from 29 in the last 14 days, but Martello Sky will provide him some confidence. And I do think it was basically down to Aidan Coleman's skill that she won this race. Obviously, she's a very talented mare, but to kick off that final bend and scoot across Indefatigable to get the near side rail was a crucial move. And she only won by a neck at the line. And that move early in the home straight may have been the difference between victory and defeat. So good from Aidan Coleman. Brilliant from Lucy Wadham again. Great placing to put Martello Sky in this race at Cheltenham. I don't think the form is overly strong, although Indefatigable obviously has some good form in the book early in the season. But yeah, I'm just going to give a nod to Aidan Coleman there, Chris.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I just I hadn't twigged that myself that he'd been having a tough time. Of course, his only other winner in the last fortnight was Snow Leopardess in the Beecher Chase. So he's kind of raising his game for the big occasions, isn't he?
Exactly. And the thing with Snow Leopardess is obviously Aidan Coleman got banned and fined for using his whip too much as well in that race. So, I mean, even that victory was tainted. So the win on Martello Sky, I think I saw just after the race, they crossed the line and the cameras focused on Aidan and he took a big sigh and breathed a big breath as well, which obviously just showed the emotion and the fact that he was obviously relieved to get another winner on the board.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say it because I guess if Aidan was here, he would say it in his own defence. I mean, those staying handicap chases on soft ground when you get a close finish, it's can be very difficult to avoid going over the number. I mean, I know that obviously jockeys should stick within the whip rules, but you know, I do think those slow motion finishes where it takes a couple of minutes to run the final furlong can be a bit of a trap for jockeys when you're having to fight out a battle like that.
I completely agree. You know, she was still finding as well, Snow Leopardess, she was still finding for the riding of Aidan Coleman. But look, the rules are the rules. So, you know, you've got to stick to them.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that was Cheltenham on Saturday. After the break, we'll be looking at the races at Doncaster.
Members Club is the ultimate resource for racing enthusiasts and punters, brought to you by The Racing Post. Get access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. Head to racingpost.com and click subscribe to find out more.
And so then we had some quality action at Doncaster as well. Very enjoyable success. Tom, I'll come to you first for Tommy's Oscar. You must have been on, surely. I don't know if you back every horse with Tom in its name. presumably not. But, you know, a popular winner for Anne Hamilton and her small team up in Northumberland. They got such a good strike rate for the season. I think they're on something like 35% so far.
Yeah, Anne Hamilton's an overlooked trainer. I think people and punters are starting to pay her the respect she deserves. She's done phenomenally well, obviously, and Ian as well, who's a big part of the operation, with her horses this year, Pay the Piper, Babington Bob, Tommy's Oscar, brilliant strike rate, level stakes profit for each of the last 3 seasons, if you include this one currently. It's a team you need to keep a close eye on, and Tommy's Oscar justified strong market support under Brian Hughes, who gave him a brilliant ride. It's a race that I thought fell apart in the straight a little bit. Sonogino was too keen early. He was the horse, the 4-year-old in here, that could prove to be anything. And he unfortunately raced too keen early on. Take It Easy, I don't know how Take It Easy found trouble in running. How do you find trouble in a running in a reasonably small field, 2-mile hurdle contest? But he did, and that was his chance gone in the straight as well. And Pyramid Place, well, he's a bit of a nutcase. Paddy Brennan gets on well with him, but he was never really in contention to win. So Tommy's Oscar and Geronimo were the two horses to take out of it. They fought out a strong finish. Tommy's Oscar gave Geronimo plenty of weight, especially with Theo Gillard's claim on the runner-up. Tommy's Oscar's a good horse. Moving forward, he'll probably win plenty more races. though his mark is going to go dramatically up again. He's currently 147. I imagine he'll be in the 150s now. I don't know where Ann Hamilton will place him, but Ann Hamilton knows how to place a horse. She'll try and find another easy race, potentially up north, for Tommy's Oscar.
James, what did you make of it? I thought the winner maybe has a bit more to offer, as Tom was saying there.
Yeah, I'd agree with Tom, and I think he's right in the sense of that there might just be a nice opportunity for the horse. I don't sort of know the calendar in terms of handicap hurdles up north, which they predominantly run their horses in, and where they might end up. But this is a horse, as you say, is just continuing to improve. You know, it's a big sort of question mark, I suppose, having won so well at Haydock. It wasn't too far away, but you know, it's through 3 or 4 weeks, and that was really, really impressive. And you sort of wondered whether they were just going to really go for a top-notch sort of handicap, but they didn't. And they came here, and he's shown a different sort of level of ability. You know, he won very easy the last day, and this time he's about to sort of battle it out almost. Look, he's an improving horse all the time. We know he's got some very, very good form in the book, and where he goes next will be very interesting to see.
Very good. And then we had the Summit Juvenile Hurdle, a second consecutive Grade 2 success for Knight Salute for the Super Soaraway Milton Harris team. Tom, I think there's a suggestion of the Triumph Hurdle being on the agenda, which you would expect with a high-flying three-year-old. Is he good enough to be in the reckoning?
Well, you've got to factor him in. Obviously, he won the Triumph Hurdle trial back at Cheltenham in November, although that form doesn't necessarily stack up well. The runner-up, Saint Riquier, hasn't performed overly well since. Filled the runner-up berth again, but in a weaker race. But Knight Salute, he's clearly very talented in this division. Milton Harris having a resurgent season. I think he'll probably fall short in the Triumph, if I'm honest. The runner-up is the horse I want to take out of this race, Porticello. Now, he led early. He was gifted 3 lengths at the start, which was very kind, given he was 6-4 favourite and shaped really well at Weatherby on his previous British start under rules. But this is a horse who's definitely going to improve for a trip. 2 miles and half a furlong isn't enough of a stamina test for him. He's a big scopey sort against speedier and flat types in Knight Salute and Impulsive One, who finished first and third, respectively. I think if Gary Moore steps Porticello up to 2.5 miles, he could have plenty of races in him. He's obviously very young, only a three-year-old and just making his third career start. So he'd be the horse for the tracker, I think. Knight Salute, yes, he should run in the Triumph. Do I think he'll win? No.
No, fair enough. James, yourself?
Yeah, interesting race on paper. You know, we saw all the horses that sort of caught the eye in Britain in terms of the juvenile hurdles, albeit none of them really sort of really impressive yet, I don't think. They all turned up and he beat them. I agree with Tom about the second. I think he will probably be, I know Gary Moore does very well with these sort of types. I imagine he's going to be more sort of a chaser down the line, and that's probably where he's going to come into his own, possibly even in the next season, take a similar path that I did with Naslam as a four-year-old. I agree in the sense of I think the Triumph is going to be particularly Irish dominated. I think his price, Knight Salute, is probably a little bit short because there could be some clues in terms of what Britain have got to offer in the finale. In the finale juvenile over Christmas. The horse I have looked at 50-1 for the Triumph Hurdlers as a massive each way price, just hoping that maybe things would go well, is for Jane Williams, a horse called Saint Segal, who won really, really impressively on first start at Bangor. The yard are having a pretty decent season. We'll probably turn up at Chepstow. We'll probably find those strange conditions that you tend to get there all to his liking, and he could be an improver. And the only other British horse that is of interest in that market is In This World, who is still a colt, unbelievably. And when he went at work, they were talking about stallion career. So he's a particularly interesting horse, but you would expect the Triumph to be going over to Ireland, and there's a strong favourite already in the market.
Was that an actual tip at 50-1 though, James?
I think in a way, yes. I would go. I've backed it at 50-1. I was impressed. When I spoke to Jen Williams at Wincanton the other week, actually, she was talking the horse up, which is always nice to hear. But unfortunately, I didn't tell her that I'd curse the horse for his future expectations.
Probably, there you go. Probably just as well. Yeah, but and 50-1 still available, is it?
I believe so. I believe so.
Saint Segal, you said. Very interesting. Well, we'll try and remember that in 4 months' time. If the result goes your way, another winner for Paddy Brennan was Knight Salute. I thought that was one of the significant aspects of that race. Veteran jockey having a great season. I think he's on a 23% strike rate, which would be a career best for him if he manages to sustain it all the way to April. 56 winners on the season so far, which is already more than he had a couple of seasons ago, obviously. COVID for short, and that season was, but still. And then we move on. 2 for gold won the handicap chase, staying handicap chase that closed the card at Donny on Saturday. I feel fairly certain that Tom's going to put in a good word for Jet, having mentioned Ollie Murphy veterans earlier.
Yes, I thought Jet ran a screamer for Ollie Murphy, and James Bowen gave him a great ride as well. He's a 10-year-old, already mentioned Hunter's Cool, as you say. Two big performances in defeat for a couple of Ollie Murphy trained veterans. I thought he ran a really good race on his first start for Connections after moving from Jessica Harrington. Obviously very well handicapped based on his best form. Previous grade 3, grade 2 winner as well for Jesse Harrington. So if Jet can build on that, then I think he could go well moving forward, especially in veterans races. He obviously qualified for that. Now, this was a race that was just marred by jumping errors, basically. Mr. Muldoon made a couple. He led early and faded away. The Wolf was my idea of the winner going into the race, and who I thought was going to win 3 out when he made a shuddering error under Adrian Heskin. He stuck on really well at the run-in as well. I think he's the eye catcher of the race looking forward. He'll definitely have races in him again for Ollie Murphy as well. Corto Rico, who was the subject of strong market support, I think it was as big as 14-1, was sent off 9-2. He ran okay, but he made mistakes as well, and he hung under Brian Hughes, eventually finished second to 2 for gold, who, look, he made his own bad mistake early on in the contest. David Bass was brilliant on him, as he is all chasers, firing him into the fences, getting rid of that doubt that was in 2 for gold's head after he made the mistake. And Bassi in the saddle probably made the difference there for favourite backers. But the Wolf is and Jet as well are the two horses I want to be taking out of this race.
James, how did you see it?
I firstly feel for Tom Collins being sat next to Dave Orton in what was one of the bizarre finishes of the season, as you say. It must have been interesting. Yeah, I was a little bit unsure. I'd sort of assess it. I think like a lot. I mean, as Tom says, it was the sort of errors that sort of made this race so sort of interesting. I look at two for gold and think, well, this is a horse who's going to want a bit of soft ground and sort of one of those big handicaps. But I just wonder whether he's a little bit too high in the weights to really land one. And he won't go up too much, but he might go up again. You know, we now sort of reminded ourselves that he does stay 3 miles as well as he should. And before last season, they were sort of going in between the distances with him. You know, those big 3 mile handicaps are going to be on the agenda for him again. I imagine another shout out to the Sky Bet Chase, really, considering one there, that's probably going to be the target. But I just question whether his handicap rating might see him come up against those who are a bit more to prove almost.
The Racing Post Christmas Countdown offers you the chance to win the ultimate Cheltenham Festival experience for you and 3 friends. Travel in style to Gold Cup Day with helicopter transfers from your 5-star hotel and experience fine dining in the Chez Roux restaurant with some of the finest views over the course. To enter, simply place a bet on the Racing Post app on Friday. And on top of that, there are huge weekly prizes available as well. Find out more at racingpost.com/Christmas Countdown.
Okay, so we have another excellent week's jump racing ahead of us. We've got a Newbury on Wednesday, some good West Country racing. There's a Wincanton and Exeter on Thursday. And then ending the week, we've got Ascot's 2-day pre-Christmas meeting, which is always great fun. A couple of interesting looking novice races for Friday's card. Interesting looking if all the big names turn up. There's John Bond, promising young hurdler with Nicky Henderson, moving into graded company in the Kennel Gate, possibly on Friday. We'll wait to see if those horses turn up. And then on Saturday, excellent card. Couple of handicaps at the end of it that all eyes will be trained on come the day, including the Silver Cup. Used to be the SGB for people with longer memories, and the Betfair Exchange Trophy handicap hurdle at the end of the card. We're not so sleepy. Might be trying to win it for a third time. I think he's just been taken out at the 5-day stage. He's obviously got to a very high rating. I think they were talking about the Christmas hurdle for him. So, guys, I'm not going to saddle with you with the job of picking apart those tricky handicaps so far in advance. There's a grade one on the card, the long walk hurdle. Tom, I'll come to you first. What are your expectations for this? You know, 3 mile hurdle, and usually you get soft ground at this stage of the season. It's going to be a real test.
Yeah, definitely. But this is a race I'm buzzing for, Chris, because Buzz is lining up. One of two anti-post Cheltenham bets I've had. One is obviously Buzz, and for the Stayers Hurdle, around 8-1 prior to his victory at Ascot last month in the Coral Hurdle, when he smashed on for someone by 3.25. It could have been much more. The winning margin could have been much more than that. And obviously he won the Cesarewitch as well in Newmarket back in October. So this is a horse who's dramatically improving. Connections have always had their eye on stepping up to 3 miles. I think he's going to be the dominant horse in this sphere. I think he's a great bet for the Stayers Hurdle still. I don't know. I think he's currently 5-1, maybe even bigger than that. 13-2, I can see with one firm. But I think he's going to be a great bet in that race. Anti-post or on the day, I think he'll win the long walk. Obviously, this is going to be a big test because Time Hill's also entered in the race currently. He finished second last year. Richard Johnson was fuming that he lost. But he still retains plenty of visibility. So Buzz will have to be on his A game. I just think he's the best horse in this race. I think he'll win and justify favouritism. It's a great meeting at Ascot. I love this meeting. The Kennel Gate, which you mentioned earlier as well on Friday with John Bond. I think he's currently 1-2 favourite, which I know he's favourite for the Supreme, but still that's very short, especially considering there isn't much rain forecast this week. Nappers Hill would be my idea of a bet there. He's a 3-time good ground winner. So if the rain doesn't come, then he's a play. But really looking forward to both of those races, Chris, and the whole Ascot meeting as well over the 2 days.
Tremendous. Paisley Park fans will be chewing the carpet at your suggestion that Buzz is best in the race already.
I genuinely think he has more raw talent than any horse in there. Yes, okay, he's not the best over 3 miles just yet because he's unproven, obviously, up the trip. And Paisley Park and Time Hill have been the dominant horses in the sphere. But I think he's ready to step up to this level. And Paisley Park and Time Hill haven't been at their best so far this year. And I think there is a gap there in the division and Buzz is ready to fill it.
James, is that how you see it?
Yeah, I think in normal years, you'd look at this race and Buzz is sort of a horse that's on the up, it's on the improve, and you're going, right, well, now is his first try at 3 miles. Let's see how he'll get on. And normally this race, you know, we've seen it in sort of heavy ground. It always feels very grey, this race, because it's always that sort of time of year. But it's soft ground there now. There's not a lot of rain in the forecast. So it's a sort of different sort of race in terms of what we're sort of used to. And in sort of Buzz's sort of defence, he has already got some decent form in it. So in terms of sort of pulling him apart, it's quite difficult, and you'd be pretty confident that he's going to stay because the ground's not going to be horrendous. I am a big Time Hill fan. I like this horse a lot, and I think he is the sort of the standard bearer in the 3 mile hurdling division. There is obviously the massive blip of what happened at Auteuil last time. I've sort of watched it back and had a look. It seems to me, and I hope I'm right, in that it was almost too bad to be true. There was a little bit of talk that the horse really sort of hated the sort of the obstacles there, and it just really didn't get along with him from the start, and he was too keen, and it was just one of those races that you'd want to write off, but you're going to need to, because if he runs anything like that, then he's going to be training them all. But yeah, I mean, would I back him? I suppose it depends what the price was, but I see him as sort of 11-4. I probably would, because I do like the horse, and I think he's going to be the standard bearer, and we still don't know a lot about the others. But yeah, it's a cracking meeting, as we say. God, I'd love Regal Encore to win the big handicap there afterwards.
Well, I mean, horses for courses is every chance, isn't there? I don't suppose he's had any respite from the handicapper. I tell you, Liz Nagar Oscar was the one I was interested in the long walk. I mean, I do. There's some danger of me just keeping giving chances to the same horse time after time. But I'm not even sure that he's been to Ascot before. A really stiff track like that might actually help him turn things around. Obviously, pretty disappointing at Newbury the last day. So hopefully we've all learned something from that. I've certainly learned that Tom Collins likes to have a bet on the Albert Bartlett before Christmas. That's a bit of a revelation for me. And the 50-1 tip for the Triumph Hurdle, can't say fairer than that. We're going to come now to naps for the week. And I'm going to kick off. There's a low-level race at Catterick tomorrow. Novice handicap chase, a horse called Spot On Soph. She's a young mare with Sam England, made her chasing debut at Catterick last month. And I thought she was basically getting a considerate introduction. And you could see why, given the way that she sort of cat leaped over the second and one or two others after that, but made up a tremendous amount of ground to actually be somewhere in the argument in the home straight and then fell at the last. I think her handicap rating, which was sort of derived from her hurdles performance, considerably underestimates what she can do over fences. And hopefully, you know, she'll put up a more straightforward performance and get involved tomorrow. That's Spot On Soph. I think 11-2 was the price that she'd been chalked up as in the 1:15 at Catterick on Tuesday. Tom, I'll come to you. What's your nap for the week?
You won't be getting 11-2 about this horse, but my nap is Asasi, spelled A-S-A-A-S-I, in the 4:45 at Kempton on Wednesday. Sticking to my flat race and for the nap, of course, in a mile maiden race. Now, there are plenty of promising two-year-olds in this race, some of which we haven't seen before, the likes of Royal Symbol, who represents Charlie Appleby, James Dorn and Godolphin, Sea Silk Road, who costs six figures for William Haggis, Tom Markand, etc. But this Asasi finished second on debut, was well punted, for trainer Roger Varian, which obviously you can take with a pinch of salt because Varian's horses are generally well-backed. But still, well-punted in a good-looking maiden last month, won by Bizarre Law, who had previous experience, and was extremely game in the finish. Now, Asasi travelled like the best horse in the race, finished half-length second to Bizarre Law. The third, Imperial Crown, is a full brother to LR Cam, another Godolphin-owned two-year-old colt by Frankel out of Attraction, cost $1.1 million. I think that horse is very interesting going forward. The fourth one next time for Charlie Appleby and William Buick. But the front three were so far clear. I thought Asasi shaped like a future potential black type winner. And obviously you'd want a horse of that calibre to win this race at Kempton in the winter. So Asasi, 4:45 at Kempton on Wednesday.
Very good. James, what about yourself? What have you got for us?
Yeah, there were the two I sort of picked out, and they're probably not going to be much of a price, so we'll have to watch. Silver Forever runs at Newbury on Wednesday. I'm really intrigued by her. She's obviously made a really sort of impressive comeback, winning a match race. She's in the mare's chase, a listed mare race that Jessica Harrington seemed to win every year, but she's not got a runner, luckily. I can't remember the name of the horse, Chris. Can you remember the name of the horse? She'd always win that mare's chase.
Magic of Light. Magical
that's
light.
The one, yeah. I'm so used to seeing her with nothing, so that's quite an interesting race. But then there's also a horse tomorrow in the last at Catterick. Anthony Honeybull does exceptionally well with bumper horses. He's got a horse there called Forward Plan, who I think might be worth following. Everything went wrong for this horse when he made his debut. He had problems sort of getting to the start. He was really keen early on. He looked like the winner, and then that just tiredness just factored in, and he ended up beating about six or seven lengths. As long as that drama doesn't happen, I think he'll massively step forward, and it looks a pretty weak bumper. So that's the 3:15 at Catterick tomorrow. I'd say that's the nap, because Silver Forever is going to be a rubbish prize.
Just remind me the horse's name in the Catterick bumper.
Forward Plan.
Forward Plan. What could go wrong? All right, well, many thanks to James Stevens and to Tom Collins for all their thoughts on the action ahead and the action from last weekend. I hope you enjoy a great week's racing, and if you're betting, do please remember to gamble responsibly. Thanks for listening.